The response of Patrick was, well, you just call the fucking police. And the host explained that it was an ordinance and went on and on, and eventually, apparently Vern stopped leaning against the building, and it would have been poetic justice if the building fell down at that point, but unfortunately it didn't. If you're doing nothing and you happen to be wandering around downtown, you might be interested in going over to India Joe's, because starting at noon, it may be over by now, there is a video of the homeless youth fundraising film that the Above the Line Community Consortium is using to raise money. This is the group of homeless activists, service providers, and merchants who are trying to help with a number of projects. The open-air shelter, the only legal place for homeless people to sleep at night. The youth programs that Karen Gillette is working to get together. And a youth center that Kimberly Carter, Crazy Quilt Kimberly Carter as I call her, is putting together to try to have a place for young people to go where they aren't going to be hassled. A safe place to be, which I think is top priority, really important. And something that they are in fact working on. So I've run through my announcements. Again, I'm going to repeat some phone numbers. If you have information about Zanotto's and problems that have happened to you or a friend there, give a call to Attorney Ed Fry at 425-1315. If you're interested in finding out why there's been no investigation of abuses, physical abuses by the police department against demonstrators at the Sit on the Sidewalk demonstrations in May of 94, give a call to Scott Kennedy at 429-3550. If you want to protest the curfew law, you can write a letter to the Board of Supervisors, or you can call 454-2200 and ask your supervisor to vote no. You will have a problem with downtown with a merchant and you want a mediator, give a call to 454-0605. That's the Interim Downtown Mediating Group, 454-0605. If you want to help housebreak the hosts, give a call to HUFF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, at 423-HUFF. We're thinking of setting up a table outside of the host's HQ, getting signatures against the curfew, maybe even letting this table be a table that different political groups use, whether it be the Happy Hempsters, people trying to decriminalize, I should say re-legalize marijuana since it was legal until the 30s, or and also groups like the Coalition to Recall Danner, which is struggling valiantly to get signatures, needs 150 a day, we were told today by Batlin Bob LaMonica. So those are phone numbers you can give a call to. And, of course, there's Stop Police Abuse Now, SPAN, a group that concerns itself with police abuse, needs help and volunteers, as does HUFF. SPAN is 475-2012. So I also have a kind of an interesting story from The Nation, which I'm going to run by you. It's called Confessions of an Urban Outlaw by Caverly Stringer. Could be a pseudonym here. And Caverly is described as a guy who's lived on the street for 5 years, co-editor and columnist for Street News, which is probably a New York street newspaper, and is working on a book, Vagrants in Paradise, to be published next year by Four Walls, Eight Windows Publishing Press. Before we get to that, we're going to let you hear a little more music so you can just sort of at least take a vacation from my voice briefly.
The bum on the rod is hunted down as an enemy of mankind. The other is driven around to his club as fettered, wined, and dined. And they who curse the bum on the rods as the essence of all that's bad will greet the other with a winning smile and extend the hand so glad. The bum on the rods is a social flea who gets an occasional bite. The bum on a plush is a social leech, blood-sucking day and night. The bum on the rods is a load so light that his weight we scarcely feel, but it takes the labor of dozens of folks to furnish the other a meal. As long as we sanction the bum on the plush, the other will always be there. But rid ourselves of the bum on the plush and the other will disappear. The naked, intelligent, organized kick. Get rid of the weights that crush. Don't worry about the bum on the rods. Get rid of the bum on the plush.
Banks of Marble, and that's sung by Fred Holstein. Fred is, that is a wobbly, he's certainly on a wobbly tape, and before that you heard The Two Bums, read by Utah Phillips, another old-time labor guy, been around Santa Cruz, I've argued with him. Got here the San Francisco Independent, which is a sort of a conservative bi-weekly newspaper. Happens up there. You can actually have a free newspaper that's given away in the neighborhoods. And their headline of July 28th is Curfew for City's Youth, because San Francisco is a city that is also considering a citywide, countywide, in San Francisco the city and county are the same, curfew for people who are younger. You would think that in San Francisco it's probably even more of a problem of crime, being an urban area and an area of deep poverty, a lot of different minorities, black minority in really miserable slum-like conditions in Hunters Point, other places like that. Do they favor a curfew? What do the people in the neighborhood say? What does the conservative San Francisco paper, The Independent, say? Well, I'm going to read you this story by Joe Strupp. curfew for city's youth, decision likely Monday on disputed plan. Now, you should know that there was a Board of Supervisors meeting in San Francisco on Monday, and they voted to put it off. I think 6-5, they voted to consider a milder curfew next week. So that's still coming up, still in the cards. But here is this story from The Independent. Facing an almost certain defeat by the Board of Supervisors, a proposed curfew that would require anyone under 18 years of age to be off the street by 11 p.m. will be considered by board members on Monday. Most board members have made no secret of their objections to the curfew, which is being proposed by Mayor Frank Jordan as his latest approach to reduce crime and violence by juveniles. Hardly need be added that Mayor Jordan is running for mayor again in November. Minor fact you might note. Critics say the ordinance, which is similar to the one that has been deemed successful in San Jose, would not help juveniles because it provides for no youth counseling, recreation, or other community programs. When the mayor doesn't know what to do with a group of people, such as the homeless, he throws the police at them, says Supervisor Angela Alioto during a hearing on the curfew held last week by the board's Health, Public Safety, and Environment Committee. It is wrong. It is absolutely wrong. This is a very dangerous piece of legislation. But Jordan, who has said he would place the proposal on the November ballot if the board rejects it, claims the curfew would make a difference. The purpose of this ordinance is to get young people off the street and in their homes where they belong, said Flynn Bradley, a Jordan aide who attended the hearing and has been spearheading the curfew plan. The majority of people are clearly in favor of a curfew ordinance. We have tried to draw the line between having a curfew that is fair and meets the needs of San Francisco, but does not come down on the youth. The proposed curfew would expand on an existing law that requires juveniles under 14 to be indoors by midnight, a law that is rarely enforced. The latest proposal would require all juveniles who are 17 years of age or younger to be off the streets between 11 p.m. and 5 a.m. on weeknights and between midnight and 5 a.m. on weekend nights. A number of exceptions would be allowed for juveniles who are with a guardian or parent coming or going from a job or school-related function or seeking emergency help. Any youngster found by police on the streets during curfew hours without an acceptable excuse would be taken to a curfew center in the Western Addition, where parents would be contacted and asked to pick their child up. If a parent cannot be reached or refuses to pick up the youth, the youngster would remain at the site until 5 a.m. Counseling will be available at the center, officials said. About $160,000 would be required to open and operate the curfew center and pay for related counseling and follow-up programs, officials said. Bradley said 20 neighborhood meetings were held during the past year to seek residential input on the proposal. He said most residents wanted the restriction. It's not the end-all or be-all of the youth problem, Bradley said, but it is one prong in the overall effort to help. Bradley said that 144 youths have been the victims of homicide, rape, or violent assault during a recent one-year period, and 338 other youths have been named as suspects in those incidents. He said that the curfew would reduce those statistics. Pausing briefly from this story, I want to point out that it's generally agreed that most youth crime occurs between 3 and 6 in the afternoon. So how many of these crimes actually happened late at night, it's not quite clear here from the story. Opponents, however, spoke out and strongly against the proposal during the hearing, expressing concerns that it would give the police more power to harass youngsters. The question is, will the curfew help or make things worse, said John Crew, an attorney with the American Civil Liberties Union who follows police practices. We believe it will make things worse. The best weapon the police have in fighting crime is having trust and respect of young people. This will not allow that. Crew cited statistics showing that 75% of the youths detained during the first 6 months of the San Jose curfew were in fact above the curfew age limit. Several youngsters who would be affected by the curfew also spoke against the proposal, calling it an infringement of their rights. The cops already harass us, said Tony Valerio, 16. It is not right for us to be stopped for no reason when we do nothing wrong, and that is what will happen. The board will consider the curfew during its regular 2 p.m. meeting on Monday at the temporary City Hall, 401 Van Ness Avenue. Well, I'm going to be in San Francisco next week, as I told you earlier in the show, at the hearing, the appeal hearing I'm going to have on the question of conspiracy to commit lunch, which I'm been sentenced to 2 months in jail for that one. And we'll see if the judges, well, we actually probably won't see much. We'll hear arguments, and we will, within 3 or 4 months, we'll hear from the judges what they want to do on this issue. But I'll try to do a look-see while I'm up there into what's going on with the curfew. By that time, they may actually pass something, since it's coming up on Monday. So stay tuned on future Bathrob Spears broadsides for an update on that. But the real update has to do with what's going on here in Santa Cruz. And what we really need are you listeners out there, who should be calling, by the way, at 427-3772, for you listeners to give a call to your supervisor, to write a letter to the supervisor saying that there are better ways to spend money than stopping young people because they're young. It's just not right. I mean, I haven't heard complaints from the police that they cannot talk to youth late at night if they see a youth walking around in a suspicious situation. They can do that already if they suspect a crime may be in progress, or even if they don't. If they want to talk to a young person, they walk up to the person and they talk to them. This really seems to be a kind of a measure designed to intimidate young people. And the question you have to ask yourself is, why did they leave home in the first place? You know, is this going to deal with those issues, with those problems? But I fear I may be repeating myself. In any case, the issue is in our hands and in the hands of the Board of Supervisors. Now, we're coming to the end of the show here. I think Battling Bob is probably going to be knocking on the door. Yes, he is. He's there with his glasses and his victory sign. Before we let him in, I'm going to read a little bit from Cavalry Stringer, Confessions of an Urban Outlaw from The Nation magazine. And for all of you library buffs, you can hustle down to the main library and 3 hours a day it's open, whenever that happens to be. And check out the May 1st, 1995 Nation. There's an interesting Confessions of an Urban Outlaw by Cavalry Stringer. I'll just read a little of this. I'm at the scene of the purge, 42nd Street between 8th and 9th. This must be New York City. A tax-paying, law-abiding shopkeeper, ever vigilant to keep the street the showplace of quality of life control, takes a broom handle to a panhandler loitering in front of his XXX peep palace. "Take a walk, scumbag," growls the smutmeister. At his flank, in a red jumpsuit emblazoned with the insignia of the modern-day Legion of Decency, Times Square Business Improvement District, does this ring a bell, Santa Cruz, stands a hulking West Indian street sweeper. He is eager to demonstrate, even in wages that keep him below the poverty line for 40 hours toil, his dedication to the cause by rousting a no-account bum. "Get a job," he exclaims. Watching this, I happen to look up and my eye catches the marquee of a long, dark, second-run movie house down the block. It has been closed down, so we've been promised, to make way for a mighty office tower which, after 3 years, has yet to materialize. Louis Rittenhouse, take note. In the void between the ambitions of commerce and the realities of the marketplace, the marquee has become an easel for the practitioners of, quote, art. It reads, "Many men can bear adversity, but few men can stand contempt." The beggar does not go quietly. First there is his outrage, imagine that, to vent. But from down the block approaches with hastening step a beat cop. Swiftly calculating the odds against him, the spare changer gives in with a sagging sigh and trudges westward in search of a more hospitable place. I'm going to interrupt this reading because we have a phone call.
Hi there, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
So much for that. Continuing with the story by Cavalry Stringer and winding up because we have to go shortly. I have been en route to committing my own quality of life offense, armed with a bag full of street news to peddle on the subway, an arrestable offense these days, when I had paused to witness the scene. Now the trio turns its sour gaze on me. And there it is again. Imagine. Outrage. "Go ahead," I silently challenge. "Start on me next. Say one fucking word." There is an impasse for a few seconds during which a midday muffhound sidles up unnoticed. Sizing up the four of us, crowding the doorway, he settles on me as the one blocking his way into the porn house. He moves as if to walk through me. There is a little dance as we both move right, then left, then right in synchronous you-first gestures. Again, an assist from New York's finest.
You were just leaving, weren't you?
The officer says to me. With an exaggerated bow to the porn patron, I say, Excuse me, sir. By all means, do step right in. I'm sorry. Did you want to go into one of those little rooms back there and jerk off? I give those last two words all I've got. Passers-by rubberneck from as far away as across the street. I guess they got the antisocial part right regarding guys like me and New York's quality of life. At least in this case, I certainly wasn't promoting the civil society to which Q of L pushers like Mayor Giuliani are so fond of referring. I suppose you can label me incorrigible as well. Not only am I without remorse for the nuisance I made of myself to that 42nd Street Enterprise, but I regret not having heaved my canvas bag of papers right through its plate glass window. Instead, I continue eastward. Glancing back, I glimpse the words on the other side of the marquee, Paradise for an environment, hell for a society. I am not altogether devoid of manners, however. Allow me to introduce myself. I am the obscene coda to your Kodak-colored sing-along. The verse that does not rhyme. I am the spoiler in a last-ditch embrace of the mighty myth. The naggling sight before your size. I am a vagrant in paradise. I have fallen, nay, leapt, from the fairest wheel of fortune. Neither consumer nor commodity any longer, I confound the game. Of what to do with me, there are many plans and theories, but no real clue. I have power enough to affect public policy, yet remain powerless to inform its course. As an outsider, policy is beyond my benefit. Likewise, am I beyond policy, for I am an outlaw. My crime is having lived, for the better part of the past 5 years, on the streets of this city. For most people, this seems a pity, a waste, and a cause for despair. But if you ask me, my former employer did just that. Doesn't your mind stagnate, he wanted to know, having encountered me, humping an industrial-sized bag of redeemable cans to the store? Strange you should ask, I thought at the time. I seemed to recall that on the job, any proposal I put forward that remotely resembled a bright idea got drowned in your nitpicking, and I too was complicit, allowing the salve of a paycheck to temper the ardor with which I'd fight for my ideas. Off the street, I was working 60 hours a week to keep a $984 a month studio apartment in a five-story walk-up one scant block south of the projects. On the street, I lived in the biggest mansion in New York City, right in the hub of Manhattan, Grand Central Terminal. Off the street, I was spinning in circles, chasing ambitions so vague and secondhand I couldn't define them if my life depended on it. On the street, I enjoy a life that is, for once, refreshingly clear of clutter. Hunger requires action less abstract than reaching for my wallet. In pursuit of shelter, there is no landlord intervening. Action and consequence are more purely linked on the street. Like most people, I used to cringe at the sight of a man lying prone and ragged on the sidewalk and think, there but for the grace of God. Secretly, though, it's often a more selfish matter with all of us, closer to thank God that isn't me. Off the street, I had this fear in the pit of my stomach that caught in the same situation, I would be unable to bear it. It wasn't the adversity of wretchedness I found so dreadful. It was the prospect of becoming the subject of people's contempt. For at the time, I sought, without discrimination, the approval of all. Once on the street, however, I found no great hardship, nor did I find, except in the more benign form of pity, much contempt. The street turned out to be, in fact, just the thing I needed. In the same manner that a person goes on a fast to purify his system, I needed to purge my psyche of the deceptive markers by which I had been sighting my way to a false sense of fulfillment. There was the photograph of the Porsche I had pinned to my office wall. With such carrots, I thought I could entice myself toward, quote, success. The fact that I had never bothered to learn to drive did not, in my abstruse striving, make any difference. What I needed was to make friends with myself in the raw. That was 5 years ago. Back then it was possible to find the oblivion within which this could be done. On the street, then, you could fend for yourself, keep your own counsel, and if you wanted, be left alone. If things got to where you couldn't cope, there were emergency shelters, soup kitchens, and free clothing outlets to tide you over. Today, however, facilitation of such an existence has been deemed a worthless enterprise by society. The operative idea is that vagrants must be rushed off the streets and injected back into the mainstream. We are the homeless. And implicit in the name is a presumption that salvation for the disenfranchised is as simple a matter as putting roofs over our heads. What seems to elude advocates and antagonists alike is the possibility that in the mainstream, quote-unquote, one can get caught up in a cycle with as much potential for debilitation as all the drugs, alcohol, and danger of disease commonly associated with street life. Poverty, mental illness, catastrophe, emotional crisis, violence at home, drug and alcohol addiction are all circumstances that can lead to homelessness. In these cases, it is understood that more than three hots and a cot, it takes meaningful employment, counseling, medical and rehabilitative treatment, and other services to return people to viable mainstream life. But in my case, and I suspect I am not alone, it was living in the mainstream itself that ceased to be viable. So simply being cast back into life's trappings was not a solution. Now, I wish I could read the rest of this Confessions of an Urban Outlaw by Caberly Stringer in the May 1st, 1995 issue of The Nation. But unfortunately, I got battling Bob LaMonica at the door, who's going to boot me out of here, and I got to get rolling. So what I'm going to try to do is save this for the next show, which will be on Monday. Monday at 10 o'clock, I'll be back with Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. I hope you'll be back. I hope you'll be calling in, because I want to hear from you. I got one more call here, and we're going to take this last call, and then we're going to hit the road.
Hi there, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, this is Lighthouse Linda, and this is an urgent announcement.
Go ahead.
Listeners, please get your pencil, write these phone numbers down. The children in California and across the country need your help. They're already getting a FDC budget cut from the state, and they're fighting in Congress right now. Call Dianne Feinstein, Senator Feinstein. Tell her to vote no on the Senate Finance Committee's welfare block grant bill. It sucks. Tell her, don't support block grants. Tell her you want entitlements. If the federal government approves block granting, that means the governor of each state gets to spend the money that currently pays about 80% of most assistance that aided families are getting. The governor can do almost anything he wants with that money. And believe me, it won't go to most of the families.
Anything else?
Feinstein's number in Washington is area code 202-224-3841. And in San Francisco, it's 415-536-6868. It only costs a few pennies if you call before 8 in the morning if you have a phone. If you don't have a phone and you're on aid or homeless or you know some children that need help, you've been invited to use the phone number at Welfare Parent Support Group. That's 458-9070. Please call Dianne Feinstein and confront her. She's getting calls from people that think we're a bunch of tax eaters or some sort of, like you were reading about, people that don't belong on the planet. She needs to get calls from the families of the children that are going to be hurt by block granting.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. You want President Clinton's number too?
I don't, but maybe the others do.
Well, here it is. His phone number is area code 202-456-1111.
Good enough.
And President Clinton needs to know not to support block granting if this thing passes the Senate.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Linda.
Bye.
This is it. This is the end of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. We are in the middle of the next show here, so I'm going to turn the scene over to Battling Bob LaMonica. Thank you for being with us. You're listening to 89.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Our people working throughout this mighty land, and I pray we get together and together make a stand. Then we own those banks of marble with the God. And we share those bars of silver that we all have sweated for.
Yeah! If you want a raise in pay, here's all you have to do. Go and ask your boss for it, he will give it to you. He will give it to you, my friend, yes, he will give it to you. A raise in pay without delay, yes, he will give it to you. Oh, put it on the ground, spread it all around. Dig it with a hoe, it will make your flowers grow.
What's this here? It says here. It says Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or of the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. And we're in the midst of a recall petition drive to recall five-term District Attorney Art Danner, right here in Santa Cruz County. We have 70 days to go left in the recall petition drive, which ends October 12th. I'm going to be on the air for about an hour. My name is Bob LaMonica, going to be talking about the Danner recall. I'm going to play a song real quick, and I'll be back on right after the song.
99.3 Free Radio Santa Cruz, and we just heard some Tanita Tikaram. The song's called Twist of My Sobriety. Before that, we heard some Beatles with Make Love All Day Long, and Morrissey with Interesting Drug, and also an obscure little song, I don't even know the name of or who does it, but it's a beat song from, you know, back in the 60s about Mahatma Gandhi. And we have some Zap Mama coming up. I want to remind you all that there's a show coming up for the Hemp Initiative. It's a benefit at Live Soup Wednesday, August 9th. And two bands are playing, Just Kidding and It Girls. There's a lot of good music going on in Santa Cruz right now, so I recommend that you check it out. And in about 10 minutes, Bathrobe Pierre is going to come on with Broadsides, some important community information and other services. So stay tuned, please. We got some Zap Mama coming.
Yeah. بخل فيها يومنا ليومين إذا أمسيت فلا تنتظر صباحا وإذا أثبت فلا تنتظر مساء وخذ من سيئاتك لمرضك وخذ من حياتك لموتك وخذ من سيئاتك لمرضك وخذ من حياتك لموتك يومنا ليومين يومنا ليومين يومنا ليومين يومنا ليومين
Diva, signing off. Thank you for listening to my show, Room to Breathe, a show dedicated to diversity and freedom. And I'm going to turn it over to Bathrobes Pierre. Thank you, and stay tuned to Santa Cruz Free Radio 89.3.
Nous en avons soigné une du peuple mongol d'Israïle. Il entre avec personne. Il demande toujours à sa femme on l'ose.
Come get out of the way, boys. Quick, get out of the way. You'd better watch what you say, boy. Better watch what you say.
I guess we better watch what we say. That tape ended pretty quick.
Well, you're listening to Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, 89.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. For the next 2 hours, you'll be broadsiding along with me, hopefully adding your own piece of reflection and passion to the show. We are focusing, as usual, on the rights of those of us whose rights are most often denied, those people who are poor, those people who are on the streets, those people who are sometimes called homeless, and those of us who support the rights of all those people. Today we have lots of stuff on the plate. We're going to have an interview, we hope, a call-in interview with renegade Richard Quigley. Richard is a citizen advocate. He shows people how to use the courts in a fashion that turns them more toward justice and enables you to effectively contest bogus tickets, particularly traffic citations, as well as other things. He's also a
a writer. He's published a newsletter which rivals my paper, the Street Shed Sheet. He hasn't published that paper for a while, but it was going back in 1990-91, around the time of the Iraqi genocide, you may remember. He also is a t-shirt maker. He did the famous Fuck War t-shirt, which I still have a tattered version of that, which I proudly wear occasionally, holy though it may be, in more senses than one. So he'll be calling in, hopefully. We're also going to be discussing the case of Leo Boohacker. Now, Leo, you may know, is a fundraiser, so he describes himself, a fundraiser for the, was for the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, now it's with Homeless Outreach. He was the subject of a hefty, hostile story by the Santa Cruz County Urinal, or the Sentinel, as they call themselves, on Saturday. And the headline there was Homeless Outreach at Your Door, in which the Sentinel and various other service providers, such as Karen Gillette of the Homeless Community Resource Center and Paul Merceau, who's the head of the executive director of the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program,